You know what? I think I'm gonna just like kind of bow out of this and be like, all right, you know what? I'm good. I'm good. Please don't rip my guts out. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I'm your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 19. True nature of story. Before we get into the bulk of today's podcast, first want to do some follow-up. Starting Monday of this week, I began blogging again daily. That was always my original intent when I first started writing the thoughts on story structure section at narrativefirst.com/blog. And I was listening to an interview with Seth Godin, I think that's how you pronounce it, with Tim Ferriss, the 4-Hour Workweek guy. And he was talking about how important it is, that practice of writing every day, and not just writing every day journaling or like in morning pages, which I already do and have done for decades, but more about writing in public. And even if it's just a little bit here and there, to consistently put out that message and to have your thoughts and words put out there is a great practice. And there's enough with Dramatica that I learn or better understand each and every day that I will always have a wealth of information to kind of share with everyone. So if you would like to go to narrativefirst.com/blog, you'll find, you know, daily blog postings, little short ideas here and there. For instance, last night we had our analysis of Kingsman: The Secret Service with Colin Firth, the uproariously funny James Bond spinoff for A New Generation, which I had seen, I guess, twice in the springtime when it first came out streaming. I thought it was great. And then watched again only for 30 minutes before last night's analysis at the user group meeting. If you're not familiar with the Dramatica users group meeting, for a couple decades now, we get together the second Tuesday of every month and we go over a film, different genres each month. Sometimes we'll do animated films, sometimes we'll do heavy dramas, and last night was kind of a fun action-y, action-adventure, spy-thriller film. But the most interesting part was when Chris Huntley, who's one of the co-creators of the Dramatica theory of story, once he started to go off on the influence character and their purpose with the main character. A lot of times, and I'll get into this more when we talk about the true nature of story, a lot of times when people look at story, they actually look at the characters and the situations and circumstances as like individual people, as if they're all off, you know, with their own wants and their own needs. And, you know, once you figure that part out, you'll be able to actually write a story. But then when people go to actually write the story, they are completely lost, because just knowing, thinking of story as these individual characters coming together and coming into conflict over differing wants and needs completely ignores the true nature of story, which is that they actually, all these parts relate to one another. So character, theme, plot, and genre, everything is there in relation to something else. So the overall story is in relation to the relationship story. And the main character's through line is in relationship to the influence character through line. So you can't really have a main character without an influence character. Can't have an influence character without a main character. Can't have an overall story without a relationship story. And you can't have a relationship story without an overall story. Everything works together in this seamless, holistic, you know, system where everything is relating to everything else. Every problem has a solution, every symptom has a response. Everything is perfectly balanced in a complete and effective story. So last night, Chris was going off on the influence character and how the influence character represents the path not taken by the main character. Last night's main character was Eggsy. And he had a chance at a future in the military, you know, it was very promising, just like his father. But then he decided that he should stay home and take care of his mother instead. Harry Hart, which is the Colin Firth character, comes along and shows him, well, you know, I'm the path, you know, his mindset, I'm the path that you would have ended up on had you made a different choice. And then that's where the influence character is specifically related to the main character. It's not just like Harry Hart came out of nowhere and he's like, well, manners maketh the man, let's go to work. It's, he actually represents, you know, the path that Eggsy didn't take. He represents an alternative approach, which is usually how we usually speak of it. But that alternative approach just isn't something that's out there. It's actually related specifically to the main character's personal issues. You know, so they balance each other out. And I just thought that was a really amazing way to think about it. I mean, I've heard Chris say it a million times before, but like with everything, you have to keep going over it and over and over it until, you know, you finally get it into your subconscious. So that's something that I posted about, you know, first thing this morning, that you can read about on the blog, or the thoughts on story structure section. And then, you know, various other things that I've written in the past 2 days. Also going over, I'm starting to take a look at the sequence method, which I guess is hugely popular somewhere. It's a way of looking, breaking up a story into dramatic questions. Apparently the first act is asking a question, the second act is deliberating a question, and the third is answering a question, which is, I guess, compelling from an audience point of view, but completely not helpful to an author. I mean, it could be helpful in some ways, but you're going to spend 60 pages deliberating a question. It might actually help to know what the essence of that question is and what the thematic counterpoints are going on in there, and how everything relates to one another, which is where Dramatica comes in. So what I'm trying to do is I'm looking at the sequence method and going to investigate further and see if there's any kind of correlations between Dramatica and where there's overlap, and how Dramatica could possibly better explain what people are seeing when they're looking at that sequence method. So be sure to look for that in the coming days. The last bit of follow-up concerns the Narrative First Roadmap service. For those of you who have been listening to the podcast since the very beginning, you know that in the beginning we offered what's called the Narrative First Roadmap, where I would take the synopsis, or, you know, one-page treatment, two-page treatment that you had, and figure out the actual Dramatica story form for you, fill out all the different story points, tell you exactly what should happen in signpost 1, 2, 3, and 4, and actually take one of the through lines and do a complete plot sequence analysis of it, which is a really great, cool advanced report in Dramatica that actually shows you what the structure of your story looks like from within the story. And then I would deliver, you know, a 5 to 6 page report explaining everything that was in there, and the writer could basically sit down and just start writing right away. I thought it was perfect because, you know, everybody has an idea for a story, and they know where it's supposed to begin and where they kind of want it to end, but it's just like the middle part that they can't figure out. I went through and developed this Narrative First Roadmap program, and it had varying degrees of success. So it was kind of like a 50-50 thing. Some people got it, especially those who already understood Dramatica or had a basic understanding of it. They were able to take it and just go, and were able to write immediately and got their first draft done in a couple weeks. Even those who didn't really know Dramatica but understood story intuitively well were also able to just, you know, go for it. Once they got the information there, they were able to just like dive right in and start writing. But there were some who, you know, were perhaps unfamiliar with Dramatica or just weren't able to see what it was really providing them. I mean, what I was providing them was amazingly complex and full of meaning and all kinds of different ideas and just a wealth of information from which to build upon. But if they don't actually understand Dramatica and understand what goes on in the story, they really can't do much with it. So what I decided to do is kind of put it on hold right now. I'm going to retool it and make it even simpler, because I know there's some people that just, you know, they just want a little bit of Dramatica's help. They don't need to know everything. They don't want to spend months learning the theory, and they want to know, you know, just what can they do to solve their problem immediately. So I have an idea to fix that, but for right now I'm going to put it on hold while I retool that and instead focus all the energy on the Dramatica Mentorship Program. And the Dramatica Mentorship Program is a program that lasts anywhere from 4 to 6 months, where, you know, we go through and develop your understanding of each through line and develop your understanding of the table of story elements, working our way from one domain to the next, so you get an overall feeling of what, you know, stories in different genres feel like from a Dramatica point of view. And the idea is after those 4 to 6 months, then you'll just be able to go off on your own and write whatever you want and have a command of narrative structure. Like, you'll understand story in a way that, you know, a small minority of the world understand, but in a way that you'll actually be able to write your stories and provide the meaning that you want to provide to your audiences. So if you're interested in looking at that, you'll want to check out the Dramatica Mentorship Program. I wrote a new letter a couple weeks back explaining everything that goes into it, and explaining all the people we've worked with and the successes we've had. And that's at narrativefirst.com/mentor. And with that, we'll turn to this week's focus, the true nature of story. Okay, no analysis this week, as I've got a giant article in the works. Right now it's sitting at 3,500 words. I try to keep everything down to 1,500, but it always ends up going to 2 or 2,100. This one is 3,500, so I might end up splitting it up across the 2 weeks, or I might just keep it the way it is, because it does a really great job, I think, of kind of wrapping up these audience appreciations we've been looking at over the past 4 weeks. You know, my original intent into going through these appreciations was to find better terminology. I mean, for the reach, there really isn't better terminology. It's just, you know, some people like linear option lock stories and nobody likes holistic time lock stories. But when it came to tendency and essence, which I think I might have messed up and called it nature at one point, when it comes to tendency and essence, the positive feel, negative feel, there, you know, we found better terminology for that, overwhelming or surmountable. And then with essence, we found better terminology. You know, instead of positive feeling films or negative feeling films, we found overwhelming or surmountable odds. And then with tendency, we found, you know, is the main character's personal problems, are they, you know, contributing resistance to the narrative, or are they facilitating flow through it? And the last one is story nature, which just so happens to be the title of this week's podcast and the article, The True Nature of Story. It's always been one of those appreciations where I looked at it and I just thought, this is completely useless. Like, what does it even mean? If it's an actual dilemma or an apparent work, well, that's great. That's fascinating. That doesn't really help me write a story. It's great to look at the story afterwards and go, oh, I guess that's what it was all about. But, you know, in the actual process of writing it, it doesn't really help you out at all. You know, I wrote about this subject briefly last year with the article, The Actual and Apparent Nature of Story, and I was basically discussing the issues I had with the terms dilemma and work, because I saw plenty of steadfast stories where they were facing dilemmas. And we'll get into it later when I discuss, you know, what the actual difference between dilemma and work is, but I had an issue with the fact that dilemmas were resigned to just changed characters, because I saw plenty of steadfast characters that were facing dilemmas. And that whole story appreciation just really didn't make sense to me, and it was just something else that I had put aside. But after working on the article yesterday and this morning, putting it all together, I just feel like it kind of wraps up everything, and it outlines the reason for story and the purpose of story and the greatness that is Dramatica, how it actually looks at narrative, that nothing else can do. And it actually, it pulls all the audience appreciations together and gives a purpose and a reason for narrative and why it's actually there. And the key to all of it is thinking of the audience appreciations as an electric circuit. So in Dramatica, you've probably seen it before. Every quad, there is potential, resistance, current, and outcome. You know, there is the potential of the circuit. It meets resistance, and that resistance and potential combine to create conflict. And then finally you have the outcome, or the power of the Dramatic circuit. And if you know anything about an electric circuit, you know about amps and resistance and volts, you'll find comparisons, or you'll find analogies to these. But when it comes to the Dramatic circuit of a narrative, you can see potential, resistance, current, and outcome in scenes. You can see it in sequences. You can even see it in acts. But in the audience appreciations, you're actually looking at the entire story mind at once. You know, Dramatic is based on the story mind concept, that a story is an analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem. And so when you look at these audience appreciations in terms of potential, resistance, and current, you can see that the reach, you know, the first one we talked about, that's the potential. So that's its potential to communicate to an audience. You know, whether or not it's the linear option lock, overwhelming majority of the audiences, or a, you know, holistic time lock where, you know, it's very low potential. And then you look at essence, and you see that that defines the resistance of the circuit. So the essence of the Dramatic tension is, you know, whether or not it's overwhelming or whether or not it's surmountable. That's the resistance that faces that potential for communication. And then tendency, the one we talked about last week, that describes the current within the circuitry. You know, is there resistance there, or is there flow? And it's funny because you would think, and when I was working on the article, I was thinking, oh, well, obviously tendency is the resistance. But when I really thought about it, that didn't really work out, because if you think of the speed or current of dramatic electrons throughout a story, you'd measure that by whether or not it was encountering resistance or flowing, you know, like the current of it going through there. And that, to me, fits more with tendency. And the interesting thing about this is it leaves the last one, power or outcome, to story nature. And that explains why I have so much ambivalence towards it and why I've never really used it before. Because really, you know, the outcome of the story is the outcome of the story. You know, when I'm working on a story or helping somebody write their story, I'm more interested in the potential resistance and current. And, you know, you put all those together and the outcome's going to be there, at least from my author's point of view. You know, the audience will be there and they'll interpret their own meaning of it. But as far as me predicting where it's all going to head and kind of the energy that I want to create or help someone else communicate through their narrative, I'm more focused on those first three. And the fourth is just like, well, yeah, that's just how it all came out. That's what the story mind is. Well, okay, that's great. You know, and so finding out that this was actually the power or outcome of a dramatic circuit just blew my mind and just made it like, oh, okay, now it makes perfect sense. I understand where it fits. I'm still probably not going to use it, but it's still like, it's something that I can actually, I understand its place in those quad of appreciations. What exactly is story nature according to Dramatica? Well, it's a combination of the main character's resolve and the story outcome. It's a combination of those two story points. So like all the other audience appreciations, it's a combination of two story points that kind of gives the meaning to an audience. If you're not familiar with the main character's resolve, the character arc of a main character consists of a combination of how they developed over time throughout the story, and the status of their world paradigm, or how they see the world compared to the beginning of a story. And it's interesting there because when people talk about character arc, they're like, oh, character arc, your character just needs to change. Well, actually, character arc has both a process and a state. You know, light can be described either as a particle or a wave. Both exist depending on how you look at it. In character arc, same thing. The wave is the growth over time, or the main character growth, you know, whether they need to drop a characteristic or gain a characteristic, you know, whether they're stopping or starting something. And then the actual state or the particle of the character arc, the switch, is, you know, you compare their approach at the end of a story or their world paradigm with how it was in the beginning. Have they completely changed and adopted essentially the influence character's way of seeing things, or have they remained steadfast and stayed true to their beliefs? So they still grow. They still, quote-unquote, change, because you can grow into your resolve. But when you want to look at the actual story point of main character resolve, you want to find out if their perspective or their point of view on things actually changed. So people like Luke Skywalker, Neo, Sarah Connor, Michael Corleone, William Money, and Terry Malloy from On the Waterfront, they all altered the world and the way that they see the world, and they identify themselves as changed characters. Whereas somebody like William Wallace in Braveheart, Shrek, Rocky, Captain Kirk, Marty McFly, Aaron Brockovich, or even Salieri in Amadeus, they all remain true to their personal beliefs and identify as steadfast characters within narrative. So that's the first story point. The second story point is the story outcome. And while, you know, most complete stories contain an emotional component to them, you know, how everything fared at the end, the judgment, which we got into in the audience appreciation of Essence, there's actually also a level of satisfaction or dissatisfaction with how everything turned out. And that's covered under the story outcome. And in Dramatica, that's either a success or failure. And it basically asks, you know, they're trying to achieve this goal. Did they succeed or did they fail? So somebody like Ted Kramer in Kramer versus Kramer, you know, Dustin Hoffman, he secured custody of his child. Josh, the Tom Hanks character in Big, you know, he made it back home. Andy Dufresne made it out of Shawshank. Gary and Lisa defeated terrorists in Team America World Police. Vincent, Jamie Foxx character, stopped the assassin from creating further collateral. You know, he stopped Tom Cruise there. And Marlon found Nemo. So each and every one of those stories ended in success and were satisfying. Compare that to Rocky. Rocky lost. Gordy and Chris didn't get credit for finding the dead body in Stand By Me. Ennis and Jack couldn't change cultural conditioning in Brokeback Mountain. Tom Robinson was found guilty of a crime he didn't commit in To Kill a Mockingbird. And Charlie Babbitt, Tom Cruise again, gave up his half of the inheritance in Rain Man. So each and every one of those stories ended in failure. And you can see that it's very kind of cold, it's very logical, it's very rational, it's very black and white. You know, did we succeed, did we win, or did we lose? And that's it. So you combine those two story points together, you know, how the main character's resolve is, and how everything turns out, and that's how you get the story nature in Dramatica. And this is where the difference between dilemma and work comes in. So some stories are dilemmas, and some stories are work stories. Some stories are actually dilemmas or work, and some stories are apparently dilemmas or work. And the way it works out is, stories with a changed main character are considered dilemmas by Dramatica, and stories with a steadfast main character are considered works. Okay, and then that's where, well, I'll get into my problem here in a second. Stories that end in success are actual dilemmas or actual works. And stories that end in failure were only apparently dilemmas or apparently work. So, you know, it's like, well, I thought I was supposed to do this, and so therefore it was apparently a problem. You know, those are the ones that end in failure. Whereas the actual ones are like, yeah, you were right. You know, you succeeded. Those were actual issues. But see, this is where I had the problem, because steadfast characters face dilemmas just as much as change characters. You know, William Wallace there, he's given a choice. You know, either, you know, decide between having your guts ripped out or screaming freedom. That to me, strikes me as kind of a dilemma. You know, there might be a chance where you might be like, you know what? I think I'm going to just, like, kind of bow out of this and be like, all right, you know what? I'm good. Please don't rip my guts out. Or Leonard Shelby in Memento, you know, he had to decide whether or not to trust Joey Pants or shoot him in the back of the head. And that's kind of a dilemma. There's a choice there. Or maybe Christian in Moulin Rouge. You know, he had to decide at the end whether or not to turn around and start singing your song in front of everybody. There was a dilemma there. So many steadfast stories place their main characters in leap of faith situations where they face the same kind of dilemma that a change main character faces. You know, and then they have to decide whether or not to stay the course or adapt. So that's why I always had the problem with that, because I was like, that just seems false. And, you know, I love screenwriting books and love, I've read everything. But whenever I find something that's false, it's just like, I can't buy into it, because you're just kind of making this stuff up. You really don't know what you're talking about, and you keep contradicting yourself. And I felt like this was an area where Dramatica contradicts itself, where really almost all of Dramatica never contradicts itself. You know, that's why I got into it, was because of the main character growth, stop or start. There was no contradiction. It was just like, well, it's either one side or the other. And so for me, this dilemma thing always presented a dilemma to me, right? It gave me a bit of a problem. But luckily, I did some work, and I was able to actually find out that was only, well, I guess it would be an actual work, because I did find success here, which I'll get into in a second. So I wanted to know why Dramatica confines the change main characters to dilemma stories. And I thought, okay, great. This is how I'm going to wrap up this whole series. Once again, Chris and Melanie got it wrong, right? Like the last 2 weeks. Not that they got it wrong, but that it could have been more accurately defined. I thought, I'm going to wrap it up with this. And I couldn't figure out what it was that I was supposed to do. Hopefully, I was going to find some new terminology. And it turns out I wasn't the only one that thought that. And we got our first listener feedback, our first listener question. They went to narrativefirst.com/podcast, and on the right side of the screen there, you'll see send feedback or send voicemail, and you can sit there and leave a message, right? It's just like you're calling into a radio show, leaving a message. Turns out a listener actually had the same thoughts and knew that we were leading up to Story Nature and had this to say.
Hey, Jen, this is Brian Davis. So I have a question. I am assuming that you're going to be doing Story Nature in the next week or two, just based on you going through the audience appreciations. And I am interested in seeing how that differs from story judgment plus story outcome and why there's no term for that appreciation. And I think in film school, those terms often get confused because one seems to be about, you know, whether it's a personal tragedy or a personal heroic journey or an overall heroic journey or an overall tragic journey, you know, and sort of the feel of the story. And I'm curious as to how that's different with story natures. Is that in any way getting it at the character's angst, or I'm guessing probably not. So, you know, how does that part work?
Well, Brian's absolutely right. There should be an audience appreciation that combines the story outcome and the story judgment. I've written about this in a series of articles called Meaningful Endings. And, you know, basically when you have a success, good story, that's a triumph. When you have a failure, bad story, that's a tragedy. And when you have success, bad, or failure, good, those are the bittersweet endings. So failure, good, is a personal triumph, and success, bad, is a personal tragedy. So yeah, there definitely should be, you know, a set of audience appreciations that kind of evaluate that and explain, you know, if this is the kind of meaningful ending you want, you'll want to set those two story points to those values. But when it comes to the story nature, it really has nothing to do with the actual angst of the character. What it really has to do with, and this is what I discovered writing the article this week, is it really has to do with the nature of the story mind itself, of that brain that the story represents, that mind that the story represents, what the nature of that mind is all about. Look at that, our first question there. It turns out Brian actually sent in some questions to us too as well, and he had sent in this idea of story satisfaction, which I found really compelling and really interesting. The idea is that, you know, he says, in other words, isn't it more tragic if the main character is change, failure, bad, than just a failure, bad? The idea being, like, if you're steadfast, failure, and bad, that's not as bad. You wouldn't have as much regret as if you changed and had failure bad, you know, if you changed and had a tragedy. And isn't that more regrettable? That was the question that he asked. And I found this really compelling because that made sense to me. It's like, well, yeah, I could see that there's more regret, and maybe the other side is contentment. Maybe that could be the counterpoint. And regret and contentment fit into that analogy of the dramatic circuit, you know, the power or outcome of a story. But unfortunately, when you dive into it, the idea of story satisfaction, it just fails to play out. So if one changes and the story results in failure, do they regret not staying the course? Well, yeah, that makes sense. If it's change and it's a tragedy, do they regret not staying the course? Yeah, that makes sense. But then again, if one remains steadfast and the story still results in failure, do they also not regret staying the course? Steadfast characters, when they result in failure, they wouldn't regret as much as change characters. But Christian from Moulin Rouge, he definitely, certainly regrets what happened. You know, he stayed steadfast, but I'm sure he's got, you know, you can see it on his face. There's a lot of regret there. Leonard in Memento, he doesn't, but he's crazy, you know. And actually, him staying the course resulted in success. You know, he remembered to forget. And I can definitely tell you, though, that Ennis Del Mar from Brokeback Mountain, the Heath Ledger character, he definitely regrets his decision to stay the course and stay away from Jack. So the regret thing doesn't really work. And it seems to be more a function of the story outcome, success or failure, which is what, it's the satisfaction part of the ending. You know, if you regret it if it's a failure, and you're content if you're satisfied. Okay, so you're just basically rewording story outcome, and that doesn't really help. And it also, this is the interesting part too, thinking this way also makes the assumption that the presence of a story form naturally argues against the alternative. Okay, so what does that mean? You're arguing that a change in approach that leads to failure makes the alternative argument that remaining steadfast would have led to success. And that is false reasoning. Sometimes remaining true would lead to success, but not all the time. And in Dramatica, it's the grand argument story, right? But that's what the story form is all about. The author is making an argument as to the appropriate way to solve problems. But that argument that is made against something does not simultaneously argue for the alternative approach. So if you think of The Treasure of Sierra Madre, the Humphrey Bogart character, Dobbs, If he had remained driven by rational thought instead of giving into his emotions, would he still have ended up dead and without the gold? Quite possibly. And likewise with Hamlet. If he had continued to pine on and on about whether to be or not to be, would the memory of his father still live on? Okay, you might have an argument there, but one could just as easily argue that Claudius would have run him through the 9,000th time the kid gave in to his thoughts. It's like, you don't know that for sure. The story form itself argues its collection of thematic story points from a unique set of circumstances. It doesn't argue against or for another story form. So this is why the absence of a time lock doesn't necessarily mean that there's an option lock, right? You have to make sure that you have that in there. The notion that a changed paradigm leads to a tragedy does not guarantee that remaining steadfast would have resulted in triumph. Which brings up his next thought. On the flip side, isn't a steadfast success good more triumphant than a changed success good because of the amount of work it takes to achieve that purity of goodness? Here we run into the problem with making subjective assumptions about objective story points. This is the Dramatica way to look at story. In one of the daily blog posts that I started this week, I was going over the sequence method and comparing it against the Dramatica theory of story. And I wrote this: Dramatica, on the other hand, takes an objective look at story. Looking at narrative from the author's point of view, it asks, what is it you want to say with your story? Note the difference in mindset here from the sequence method. Instead of dealing with experience, the audience's experience, Dramatica deals with the process of delivering that story. It deals with the ingredients of story. So what you want to say with your story has nothing to do with how do you want the audience to interpret what it is you want to say. Authors can predict what their story will say, but they can never know the true meaning of their work. They can never understand the true outcome of their endeavors, and that's why I always ignore this, because you can never know the true meaning. You know, that article, which I'll leave a link to in the show notes, about that veil between author and audience is authors predict and audiences ascribe meaning. And you can only do so much prediction, but you'll never get the meaning. And you can only get so much meaning, but you can't really predict where it's going to go. And that's why they sit on both sides of that story, right in the middle. In other words, authors can never fully understand the nature of their story. And that is awesome. You can never fully understand the outcome, because that's that fourth part, which I'll get into. Every quad in Dramatica, there's that fourth one that's just out of nowhere. That's where nature sits. It's up. The quad isn't just on the same level. Actually, those quads, visually speaking, it's a spiral up. And all this, the up part is all contained in that fourth element, that fourth part. And that's what's happening with nature. That's what's happening with outcome, the power of that circuit. Probably makes absolutely no sense. But if you think about it enough times, you'll understand what it is that I'm getting at. The result or power of the dramatic circuit is an unknown, because it's an intersection between the author's attempt to predict what it is they want to say and the audience's attempt to get that meaning. And that is the true nature of story, is an unknown. And that's so awesome, so compelling, so exciting. So it turns out Chris and Melanie were spot on in their definition of this audience appreciation. There's no reason to change it. In the dictionary, or the Dramatica theory book, they define story nature as the primary dramatic mechanism of a story. When the main character remains steadfast, he spends the entire story doing work to try and solve the problem. When the main character changes, he has come to believe that he is the real cause of the problem. This is called a dilemma story because the main character spends the story wrestling with an internal dilemma. So by dilemma, Chris and Melanie were referring to the structure of the entire story, the entire quad of the audience appreciations, the power of the entire circuit, not just the culmination moment, which is where my thinking was taking me, and that's where I was wrong. They go on to say, a story can be appreciated as a structure in which the beginning, middle, and end can all be seen at the same time. That is so super important. A story can be appreciated as a structure in which the beginning, middle, and end can all be seen at the same time. The sequence method does not deal with this. It doesn't deal with the holistic entity of a story. Another key aspect of the Dramatica theory of story that many forget, and me included, is the idea that both space and time exist in the story form. It's all there all at once, space and time, and it converts space into time and time into space. then this idea that I had that nature only described the dilemma at the end, and it's like, well, why do Change characters have a dilemma, but Sifest characters don't have a dilemma? That's not even what they were talking about. What they were talking about was the true nature of that story mind of it trying to solve a problem is in that one instance, because it's essentially just in a split instant trying to solve that one, you know, the analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem. Was that a dilemma or was that a work? And you're looking at the entire thing all at once, the beginning, the middle, and the end, and it's such a great, fabulous way to think of story, because you're seeing everything relate. It's not just this, then this happened. It's like all these things happened, and all of them related to one another and balanced each other out. It's really exciting to me. You can see why my blog used to be called Story Fanatic, because I just get really excited about it. So Chris and Melanie were defining the holistic nature of story by identifying the power of narrative throughout that entire circuit. That's that fourth element, the rising up of the quad. Power is seen throughout the circuit, not as the thing that's spit out at the end. You know, well, here's some power. It's actually the relationships between all the components that add up to that power in the narrative circuit. That in mind, it becomes clear the difference between dilemma and work, actual and apparent. This story point defines the story mind itself. When you look at actual dilemma stories, you see main characters who change their resolves and find success in the story. And in the link in the show notes in the article this week, I'll have visual representations of these stories, but you can think of Ted Kramer, right, from Dustin Hoffman, started thinking of someone other than himself in Kramer versus Kramer and found his son waiting for him at the other end. Right? Change success. Chris Kyle, an American sniper, chooses family over military and finds he can help even more soldiers through his work rehabilitating disabled veterans. Another actual dilemma. And with Inside Out, Joy starts to give the other emotions a chance to run things in Riley's head and finds it easier to integrate into a new situation. Overall, all these stories showcase main characters who believe themselves part of the problem and found success by changing their approach. So you're looking at the entirety of that story mind, and it was an actual dilemma. That's what we were exploring. What about apparent dilemmas? So these are stories where the main character changes, but it ends up in failure. Lester Burnham started seeing things for what they really were and ended up dead because of it in American Beauty. Jules decided to start being supportive instead of speaking out against her best friend's wedding and lost the chance at marrying her best friend in My Best Friend's Wedding, Julie Roberts. And Dr. Arroway switched to seeing the infinite possibilities in the universe rather than what most likely exists out there, kept everyone from finding out whether or not they were truly alone in contact. So all these main characters believed themselves part of the problem, and by changing, ended up bringing failure to the efforts to resolve the story's central problem, and that's why it was an apparent dilemma. So overall, I look at this story mind, and it was an apparent dilemma. Now actual works. So we switch now to steadfast main characters, so these are the work stories, and ones that actually required work to succeed. Jason Bourne focuses on staying hyper-aware of everything around him, and that helped him take down Treadstone in the Bourne Identity. Anna Katrova's determination to stay the course helps her secure Tatiana's baby while successfully fighting back against the Russian mafia in Eastern Promises. And Ralph's steadfast belief that a signal fire was the only way off the island helped the boys stay alive long enough until they were rescued in Lord of the Flies. See, I threw a novel in there. So these main characters spend the bulk of their narratives doing work to try and solve the problem and find success at the end of it all. And then finally we have the apparent work stories. These are ones where the attempts to work the problem only ended up in failure. Nader's steadfast belief that he was never to blame for anything forced the dissolution of his marriage in a separation. Luke's refusal to stop fighting the good fight ends his life and the hopes of his brothers in chains in Cool Hand Luke. And Butch's steadfast confidence in his plans to get out of anything finds himself in Sundance charging out in a blaze of glory in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So unlike the previous set of steadfast main characters, these characters' attempts to do work to try and solve their problems were only apparently the right thing to do at the time. And now we come to the really interesting part, which I'm not really sure what this means, But by doing this analysis this week, I discovered something very compelling. Out of the 320 stories that are analyzed over the past two decades with Dramatica, over 126 of them are actual dilemmas. And let me say that again, because apparently I can't say 126. Over 126 of them are actual dilemmas. That's almost half. Half of every film, play, and novel throughout various generations and different cultural trends. So this isn't the last 5 years, the last 10 years. This is the last 100 years of film. This includes novels, includes Shakespeare. For some reason, there is a preference for communicating the best way to approach a problem instead of the cautionary tale. And I'm not really sure exactly right now what that means, but it seems to be a trend. So you look at the breakdown. Actual dilemmas break down into 126 stories. The next one are actual works, and that consists, those are 85 stories. And then we have apparent dilemmas, there's only 66 of them. And then finally, apparent works, there's only 27. So apparently not many want to be told or teach that sticking to your guns results in failure. It just depends, are you the audience or are you the author? Either way, you don't want to hear about how sticking to your guns results in failure. The difference between an actual problem and an apparent problem is even more staggering, 215 to 93. So I don't know whether or not this is cultural bias or biological imperative, because a lot of these are U.S. Linear-based narrative storytelling. But regardless of where it's coming from, the message is clear. The overwhelming majority of narratives trend towards a focus on solving actual problems, not apparent problems. Which, side note, is a huge bummer for me, because I really like apparent problems better, which might say a lot about me. So by examining the difference between dilemma stories and work stories, actual stories and apparent stories, we have found the true nature of narrative. You know, you look at any quad of elements within Dramatica, and you will always find one that doesn't quite fit in. Past, present, and future sit alongside progress. Memories, innermost desires, and contemplation share space with impulsive responses. And now reach, essence, and tendency have nature. When evaluating the power of an electric circuit, one doesn't simply look to the end. One must look at the operation of the entire thing all at once. When you get caught up in the individual characters of a story and their personal predicaments, you lose sight of the overall meaning and intent of the narrative. You lose sight of what it is you are trying to say. So my original intent of this series on audience appreciations was to kind of pierce that veil between author and audience. I wanted to somehow find a new approach to using Dramatica to write our stories from this audience's point of view. But by diving into this weird and somehow offbeat take on Dramatica story points, I actually found something far more exciting, a greater understanding of the holistic nature of narrative itself. Effective story structure looks at story in its entirety. It does not look at a narrative as a linear progression of events asking dramatic questions and building up tension from one sequence to the next. Rather, it considers the entirety of character, plot, theme, and genre as one complete force of nature. Once again, you always have to go back to that idea of story as an analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem. It isn't about the individual characters facing a dilemma or the individual characters going to work, but rather the characters representing facets of our own minds facing a dilemma or a work. This is why it helps to think of a story as this tiny little mind you can hold in your hand. The nature of story is to speak of the power of this story mind to process problems. You're looking at the story as a holistic system of processes. You're looking at it as all these parts working together, relating to one another. So what is the nature of a story? Is it simply a dramatic telling of events that are meant to inspire and capture audience's attention? Or could it be that the nature of story is something somehow more complex and beautiful, an analogy to one of the most intricate and infinitely powerful systems found in our universe? Perhaps the true nature of story is to simply reflect ourselves. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with another round of story structure and story analysis. If you'd like to learn more about Dramatica and how it can help you write better stories, please visit narrativefirst.com/mentor. Have a great week of writing, and we'll see you next time.